Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, it is Sunday, July 2nd, 2023. It's about 9:46 in the evening, Mountain Time, here at Edmonton, Alberta. I'm Vish. I host this podcast, Creative Control. I have spent the last day and a bit listening to Rick Froberg's voice because I was combing through some audio capturing Rick and I in conversation. Over the years, stuff I haven't yet shared on the show. Rick has been on the show a couple of times, at least to my memory. And most recently, he was on March 12th, 2018, for episode 383, where we talked about the new Hot Snakes album, Jericho Sirens. And then prior to that, he was on in 2015 for episode 217. Rick helped me facilitate interviews for a documentary I made on his band Drive Like Jehu. And that, as I think I said, that came out October 8th, 2015. I've said it before, that's the thing I'm most proud of journalistically, that documentary. So yesterday evening, Saturday, July 1st. I came upstairs from watching a movie with my wife and my daughter. I left my phone up here, which I often do when I'm watching movies, and started to get vague messages, that Rick had died, and they turned out to be true. So Rick is someone I've admired for most of my life, and he's someone I interviewed many times and got to know on that level, and then we became friends, which happens to me sometimes. When you talk to people enough times over the course of, as you'll hear, the first interview we did ever was in 2005, that's the first time we connected, so that's, it's 2023, so it's 18 years of talking. Whether it was formally or exchanging texts or direct messages or whatever on Instagram and just chatting. He's just always been a force in my life. So I was really devastated. I am very devastated as I'm talking to you. However, as I started to say near the top of this thing, I spent the last day and a bit listening to his voice. And it's so unbelievable, the news that came out that Rick had died of natural causes of what his soulmate, his brother, really, his best friend, I think, John Reese posted, John Reese, his bandmate in Hot Snakes and Drive Like Jehu and Pitchfork and childhood friends, posted on Instagram that Rick had died of natural causes, and that's where most of the information that people were sending to me yesterday came from, I think. And then it started to spread, of course, as things do. And then today, July 2nd, someone named Britt, who is Rick's girlfriend, was Rick's girlfriend posted from Rick's account to say that he had an undiagnosed heart condition, and that's why he went. So incredibly devastating news. If you haven't noticed or didn't know, this podcast, Creative Control, is named after a song that Rick and his band Hot Snakes wrote together called Creative Control. It was a little naming the show as such. Obviously, I thought we could get to what inspires creative people to do things. You know, what it means to kind of take hold of your own destiny, I suppose, if I want to get English student-y about it. And the song, I think, is about something else, maybe. But it's open to everyone's interpretation. But it was called Creative Control with K's instead of C's. And that's why the show is named as such. And so I'm going to, what you're going to hear, if you're interested here, is some tape from the various times I've interviewed Rick that I had tape for, that I could find. And so it took some hard drive digging and Googling of myself and Rick to figure this out. But if all goes well and you stick around, you will hear the very first interview that I ever did with Rick on August, or rather it aired on my morning show with my wife, was called the Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show. And it was an interview with Rick that I did in 2005. And then also on this episode, you'll hear an interview I did with Rick on that same show in 2009, April 15th. That was with Rick when he had a new band after Hot Snakes called Obits. Then you'll also hear an interview from that same morning show. That is Rick talking about the second Obits album. The previous interview was ostensibly to talk about their first debut album, I Blame You, which came out on Sub Pop. And then that second interview in 2011 was about Moody, Standard & Poor, their wonderful second album, came out in 2011. Also in 2011, it was announced that Rick and his band Hot Snakes would be doing some reunion shows at the behest of a band called La Savvy Fav, who curated the All Tomorrow's Party Festival and invited Hot Snakes to reunite, and they said yes. And so that was a phone chat that was really ostensibly for a print piece, I think for Exclaim magazine. So Rick and I literally just got on the phone. It wasn't ever meant for broadcast or for any kind of airing. We got on the phone, and I transcribed whatever he said. And I'll tell you more about those recordings in a little bit. I just want to frame my relationship with Rick for you a little bit. So Rick has been someone who's been a force in my life since I was a teenager, like a lot of teenagers who grew up in the mid-90s. You would often hear about phenomena of the late 80s and the early 90s, and you were just a little too young to have seen it, gone to see a band come through. If you live like I did, I lived in Cambridge, Ontario, so a couple years out from heading to Toronto by the time, and to see shows when Dry Like Jehu would have played at the Rivoli in 1994 or something. I was too young to have probably been even allowed into the show, let alone to have known about it. And my first exposure to them was probably reading about them in magazines or zines like Filler. I've talked about this zine from Kitchener before. That group of people would talk to people that I loved, and they did a profile on Dry Like Jehu, and I didn't know what it was. And I was just getting to the age where I couldn't necessarily go to all the shows, but I could start going drive to record stores or ride my bike to record stores. And so I would hear the name Dry Like Jehu, and I finally picked up a copy of Yank Crime, their second album and final album as a band, and bought it used at a used compact disc store in Cambridge, and brought it home and was just instantly like, what the hell? I was an aspiring drummer. The drumming spoke to me. The Rick's passion, Rick and John, they're playing, and Mike Kennedy, guitar playing, all of it just meant the world to me. So I fell in love with Dry Like Jehu, and then I subsequently fell in love with every band that Rick was in, John was in before Drive Like Jehu, their band Pitchfork. I fell in love with that. And subsequent to Drive Like Jehu, John and Rick formed the band. I mentioned Hot Snakes, and I got to see them once during their sort of original run. I saw them in 2004 at Lee's Palace. And I'll try to get to everything I can here, and it's a bit of a jumble, but Hot Snakes broke up in 2005. Rick started the band Obits with some fine people in Brooklyn. I ended up seeing Obits a bunch in different, often in Toronto and London, Ontario. I saw them in St. John's, Newfoundland, memorably at the Lanya Vanya Festival, and we actually recorded a little interview clip that was really fun and funny and unhinged. And yeah, so I got to see that band a lot. Hot Snakes, I got to see a number of times after that first time in 2004 before they broke up. I saw them, they reunited in, I found out by digging through my archives, it was actually 2011, as I mentioned. Rick and I connected for a talk about that show they were going to play in England, and then they played a few other shows. But they finally swung through on and did some more extensive touring, reunion touring, I suppose, in 2012. So I saw they were playing Sled Island in Calgary, and that was all I needed to convince my job at the time to let me go and cover that amazing year of that festival. So I got to see Hot Snakes there. Then I found out they were playing Pop Montreal in September of that same year, and then the next night they were playing in Toronto. So guess who took the train to Montreal just to see Hot Snakes? And then I also got to see the Dirty Three, which changed my life as well. Then I took the train back and saw them in Toronto. I think it was the next night or the night after. I don't remember. Hot as hell, that show in Montreal. They could barely get through it. It was too hot. It was grossly hot. And we were all wiped out and exhausted by that. But then the Toronto show was also intense at the Horseshoe. I remember being right up front and thinking I was going to die because of the crush of people who were losing their minds that Hot Snakes were playing at the Horseshoe. And then in 2018, saw Hot Snakes again in Detroit, made a trip down to Detroit, a long drive by myself, but ran into some friends in Detroit to see them play. And then again, saw them in Toronto some months after that. It was in June, I think, the show in Toronto. It was the day the terrible Ontario Premier, Doug Ford, was elected for the first time. So kind of a bummer of an evening, except the Hot Snakes were great. I got to see Rick play a lot. I actually got to see Drive Like Jehu play eventually when they reunited. I saw them in Toronto in, I think it was 2015. They played as part of a Riot Fest thing there, and absolutely incredible. I can't recall if it was before or after their show that I released that documentary I was telling you about. That documentary means so much to me, and again, Rick helped me make it by connecting me with all the band members, and fortunately or unfortunately, they heard each other talk about each other in ways that maybe they wouldn't talk to each other directly, and that can be the double-edged sword of being someone like me, because you want to tell those stories and get those stories out of people, but you don't want people to be upset with each other, you know? And I don't want to get into all that, but I know that that documentary was revealing for lots of people, including people in the band, and for better or for worse, I love it. I'm very proud of it, and I noticed that a couple people were sharing it around again after the news came out yesterday, which is nice, but I wish it didn't have to be shared, I suppose. So yeah, I got to know Rick quite a bit from doing all that stuff, going to see them. We would hang out before shows and after shows and all that sort of stuff and stay in touch. As I mentioned earlier, I first interviewed Rick in 2005 for that show I had with my wife called the Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show. And after that, I interviewed him many other times about his music, about his artwork, But whatever he was up to, all the bands he was in, all the bands he used to be in, and over the years we started to exchange the odd text or message on Instagram, direct message, and just talking about whatever. And he was very amused that I was moving with my family to Edmonton from Guelph, Ontario. Anytime I would put on Instagram about how cold it was, who's the first person really to like it? Rick Froberg. Kind of little jabs at me for being up in the cold and being so far away. And that meant a lot to me. Like, if you don't know who Rick Froberg was, I'm trying to paint you a picture, and you'll learn more about him during these interviews that I've got lined up for the rest of this memorial. But for what it's worth, Rick's voice was the best rock and roll voice I've ever heard in my life. I don't know how to explain it. It's just unearthly, or whatever the word is, just like the most impassioned howl I've ever heard. And part of his voice was his songwriting, his lyricism, and his musicianship and his instincts as a musician. Just able to convey so much pain and rage and emotion. And I've just never heard anything like it. I haven't heard anyone do it since. I feel like the last time we talked about Hot Snakes for the Jericho Sirens album, he invoked AC/DC at one point when we were talking about something. And yeah, I think a Bon Scott is having that same, where in the hell did this voice come from? And I think Rick had the same thing. But it was cooler and more artful and more enigmatic and somehow more direct. It was the best. It's just the best. And very just inspiring for me and my friends. And then when we all kind of got to know him a bit. We just, you know, to like drive like Jehu was to like something at the time we did anyway. It was like to not really know it. We didn't get to see the band when they were going initially. They were enigmatic, and even Hot Snakes was kind of puzzling, like baffling, and it was just very mysterious in his own way. It comes up on one of these episodes or one of these interview segments where Rick would often have different names on his credit sheet in an album. Rick Froberg, Rick Farr, Rick Fork. Who was this guy? And, you know, part of why I wanted to make that Drive Like Jehu thing was because I didn't know the story of this thing I love so much. I just didn't know the band, really. They didn't do much talking. By the time people were super interested in them, they were kind of done. And I think getting to know them all, they're all pretty low-key. Like, not a big deal, man. That's kind of the attitude. Like, the rest of us are, like, frothing at the mouth and fawning about how fucking unreal they are. And they're like, yeah, it's fine. It's not a huge deal, you know, very modest in their own way, but geniuses. And Rick really exemplified that. So yeah, a huge inspiration and influence on me. I bought pieces of his artwork. I'm just going to find it. I posted about this. I'm holding in my hand a note, a handwritten note that Rick wrote me on Peanuts stationery. There's a little shot of Snoopy and Linus at the bottom. I bought some of Rick's art in the last few years. I've hung one up. I literally on Thursday night, one of his pieces that I haven't yet gotten framed was in the living room, and I moved it over to my office beside a portrait of Dallas Good of the Sadies that Don Pyle shot and I bought from Don Pyle. Both things have to be framed, and I moved Rick's art and I leaned it against Dallas's art on Thursday night, and I just said I was going to take it to myself. I said I'm going to take it to the framing place and I'm going to get them both framed. And Dallas passed away, and I'm still hurting from that. And then Rick dies, and it's really fucked up. I'm going to read you the note. all it says is, "Hey, Vish, thanks for helping out the starving artiste. Hope all's good up there in Ed. Will I see you again? We'll see. We'll see. XO Rick." He thought he'd never see me again because I moved here, and now I'll never see him again. I just want to send all my love and support to everyone who's hurting from this. Rick was so... I just want to be clear about something, because this comes up sometimes with me and these types of shows that I end up having to do, these recollections, these memorials. There's always a part of it where I'm baffled that I was able to connect with some of my heroes and some of the people I most admire. And I realized that one of the reasons it shouldn't be that baffling is because they're just genuinely nice. I'm not the only one like this. There are people all over the world just like me who've had the same kind of dynamic with Rick. Maybe started out as work friends, you know, or having this professional connection. And then if he liked you or whatever, it became a stronger thing. And I would like to think we had that. But I never know, you know. But I know there's lots of people like me, rather, out there tonight and today and will be for the rest of our lives hurting. He was really warm and sweet and gruff and funny, so fucking funny guy, and just a lovely spirit. And all that's really got me through, it's been hitting me in fits and starts how hard this is, but for me personally, it has been being able to go through this archive of stuff and listen to us talking and me laughing at us laughing together sometimes, or laughing at him being so difficult sometimes, or, well, not difficult. I'm, you know, one of the weird things about an exercise like this one for me is I have to go through like, oh shit, I wasn't very good. Am I even good now? I can't tell. Because part of me is like, man, I'm so much better than I was in 2005. But then the other part of me is like, maybe you're not. Maybe you're the same awkward questioning guy. I don't know. I guess I got to read my reviews on iTunes or whatever. I'm going to talk about some of these clips now. I haven't yet, as I'm speaking to you, decided if I'm going to talk in between them or not. But I am going to start off by framing the fact that I'm going to present these to you in chronological order. So once again, obviously this episode will not feature anything from the documentary I made, Do You Compute? The Story of Drive Like Jehu. I will link to it in the podcast description if you want to hear it, if you haven't heard it before. It will also, obviously, maybe not obviously, it won't include anything from Rick's last proper appearance on this show, which again was in 2018, to talk about the Hot Snakes record, Jericho Sirens. I almost said Drive Like Jericho. That's how fucked up I am. I'm sorry. So it won't include any of that stuff, because those were times Rick was formally on the show, and they're out there. What I've gathered here is stuff that is from my audio archives and hasn't been part of the show, but is all going to be here in chronological order. So like I say, I haven't yet figured out if I'm going to talk in between these or not. Maybe I will. Maybe I will do that so that you're not lost as these things come up. Going to go into this episode of the Mish Fish Interracial Morning Show, episode 20, airing on August 31st, 2005. Rick's appearance was precipitated by the fact that there was an announcement that Hot Snakes would be breaking up. And I imagine 2005, I mostly would have heard about this via the Swami Records message board or something like that. And I'm struggling to remember how I got Rick's email address even to ask him to be on the show. I don't have any recollection of that. Maybe it was the Swami website or the Hot Snakes website. It could have been one of those things, and he responded. You know what? I'm going to say it was that. I feel like they had a really fun website. It was all like, it would strobe lights or something, as I recall, and there was probably a contact there, and I probably blindly wrote to it, and that's what we got. So the audio quality is poor. This was the first year of the show. The show started, this college radio show started in April of 2005, and one of them, I had always resisted doing a radio show because I thought it just felt pointless, like just playing music, you know, like driving around with your car windows rolled down and blasting your speakers. Well, who am I to show off about the music I like? I needed there to be a point to it. So my wife and I worked on a show. Sorry, my now wife and I came up with this, some concepts. And among the things is we were going to do community-oriented listings and play music that related to what was going on in the city of Guelph and surrounding areas. And we were also going to try to play some new releases and Canadian music. And we'd feature some interviews. Now, up until this point, I was a few years, I want to say I was 2 years, 3 years? I was 2 or 3 years into doing print interviews, interviews for print pieces and magazines. I had a couple of freelance gigs, regular freelance gigs, and I would interview people, and I would record them initially on a tape recorder and eventually on a mini disc player that I bought. And what I learned in starting to do the show, well, first of all, I was just going to repurpose those print record the interviews for the print pieces into radio things, but I didn't know how to edit anything. In the early days, I feel like we would just plug in the mini disc player or the tape player to the board of the radio station, and I wouldn't, they'd just be sort of the raw audio. And it was a couple of years until I learned how to actually use the editing software and how you can, you know, upload the mini disc stuff to a computer and all that stuff. But this isn't at this point. So in 2005, the show has just started. And yeah, that's, I used a mini disc player and it was a phone. I did it at home probably. And it's a phone tap thing. And it was either the mini disc player or probably the adapter has a noise floor thing, where if someone is like Rick, who takes a lot of pauses between thoughts, when he goes into a pause mode, either thing is creating a noise. Someone smarter than me can probably just shaking their head. I don't know exactly how it works, but when Rick gets quiet, the noise floor rises and there's like a hissing sound, and it's a little much. I did my best to clean this up. I presented here because I think it was interesting, and it's, it's the first time Rick and I spoke. I don't promise that this is the best audio you'll ever hear. Is it intelligible? Yeah. 85% of it is. Sometimes it, the technology doesn't allow for it. So yeah, Rick and I are pretending we're live on the radio. And so I didn't include any, I'm not going to include any songs that the radio throws here. Suggest are coming. I'm just going to leave it clean and just, you'll just hear me and Rick talking. I know it would be nice to hear the songs, but I just thought I won't, I managed to find most of the original raw recordings and I don't want to insert the music. So sorry, but for those of you who know Hot Snakes or Drive Like Jehu or whatever, or Pitchfork, whatever we discuss, imagine the song or play it for yourself on your record player or whatever you have, and enjoy it the way it's meant to be heard, not as some shitty compressed MP3 or whatever the hell would have, however it would have been captured or presented at the time. So we're pretending we're live on the air and listening to songs. We have a little bit of fun with that. It's all a pre-record, so you'll hear that. I noticed that I can't tell if I'm doing like a Norm MacDonald effect where I articleize words for fun. So I repeatedly say the Hot Snakes, not Hot Snakes, the Hot Snakes. The way like Norm would be like, are you enjoying the spaghetti? The, you know, I don't, that's the wrong example. But anyway, that's a thing I will mention. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm gonna, that's all I'm going to say about this. I think I've talked for a long time already and I want to play these things. So Here it is. This is Rick Froberg talking about ostensibly about the end of Hot Snakes and some other stuff. And again, we aired this on the radio at CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph on August 31st, 2005. Sorry again about the sound quality.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show, the Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. My name is Vish, and I'm very thrilled to tell you about our guest this week. He's played guitar and sang in such great San Diego bass bands as Pitchfork, Drive Like Jehu, and the Hot Snakes. He is one of punk music's most interesting lyricists and singular vocalists, I'd like to say, and he's also an acclaimed visual artist whose work was recently exhibited as part of the 2005 Bassfield exhibition in Melbourne, Australia. He's also designed album covers, websites, and t-shirts for most of the bands he's been in, plus good friends like Rocket from the Crypt and Swami Records. His amazing band, the Hot Snakes, called it a day this month, which made me want to call him up and find out why. So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, all the way from, I believe, Brooklyn, New York, please say hello to Rick Froberg. Hi, Rick.
Hello.
How's it going?
Fine. That was a funny intro.
Was it too much?
No, it was fine. It's, I guess it's all true.
Most of that's accurate, I think. I aim for accuracy wherever possible.
Yeah, it is accurate.
Okay, good.
More or less.
Good.
It's still funny, but yeah.
Well, it's weird to hear someone's life or recent work, I guess, distilled down to one little paragraph. But I'm trying to enlighten people that may not know who you are.
Okay.
Yeah. So first off, I must ask about the end of the Hot Snakes. The band is done. Is that true?
Yes, it's true.
Okay. And why is it done at this point?
Well, there are a few practical reasons. One is that they all live, you know, thousands of miles away, and I live on the other side of the country, and they live on the other side of the country, so that was a practical consideration, and I think it's just sort of people are kind of getting older and wanting to pursue careers and, or have to pursue careers and things like that in order to see themselves and their families,
especially.
Right. And, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
No real hard feeling. I think, you know, artistically everybody's, you know, okay with what we were doing. We just had to stop doing it the way it was arranged, you know.
Right. So it sounds like it was mostly a geographic consideration, maybe?
Not entirely, but it certainly had a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bands stop.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of, you know, like it was unstopped.
Okay. Well, by my count, this is at least the third band that you've been in with John Rhys.
Fourth if you count the hardcore band. I was in with him for about 5 minutes, but yeah.
Well, what was that band called?
It was called Little Itch.
Oh, okay.
And that was I actually have a good show with the band, so I don't think it's fun.
Oh, well. Not sure. Well, we'll include it. We'll include it for these purposes. That's fine. One of your earliest bands together was Pitchfork, which I guess you guys started when you were pretty much kids. Is that right?
I think I was probably legally an adult when we started it, but we were, you know, I think kids wouldn't be. It wouldn't be wrong with kids.
Okay. I wonder what you can tell me about being in that band. I know it's a long time ago now, but I just wonder about what it was like being in that band and the sound you were going for at that point in your life.
Just trying to do what kids do, and I'm sure that we're probably trying to sound like our favorite hardcore bands or DC bands or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do.
Yeah. Well, I was hoping we could play something by Pitchfork now, and I was hoping you. I know this is different. What's that?
As long as I have to listen to it, I don't.
Well, I think people would like to hear something by the band, and I know this is maybe a little awkward. I wondered if you might care to actually pick a song.
I think that I'm going to play a Pitchfork song. How about trying to remember what some of our songs were. Yeah, you know what? You're going to do that one.
All right. Well, we could do something from either of the Eucalyptus LP.
I would do something from definitely from the record and not from the 7-inch.
Okay. Well, let's see here. How about... oh, geez, they're also... I don't know. I was thinking maybe we could even do Burn Pigs Burn, maybe.
Sure.
Is that fair?
That's a good default Pitchfork song, I suppose.
Well, all right, well, we'll go with that. All right, here's Burn Pigs Burn by Pitchfork on the Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show. We'll be back with more with Rick Froberg. And we're back.
That was pretty quick.
It's a short song in some ways. That was Pitchfork with Burn Pigs Burn from their Eucalyptus LP. We're here today chatting with Rick Froberg, who some of you might know from the Hot Snakes and Drive Like Jehu. And that was another band he was in with John Reese. I wanted to ask about that period again a little bit. I mean, well, I guess after Pitchfork, I know John got Rocket from the Crypt going roughly around that time. And then the two of you started to work on Drive Like Jehu, is that correct?
Around 1990, I suppose.
1990. Now, when I first heard it, like, Drive Like Jehu was just such a breath of fresh air when I first heard it, which was actually probably close to the time the band had ceased to be. I remember being in high school somewhere around 94, 95. Mm-hmm. And I know the band meant a lot to people while it was around, and that adoration seems to have grown over the last 10 years. Did you feel like the band was onto something unique while you were in it?
Sure, I suppose. I mean, I don't know how worried about uniqueness we were, but we probably were. I'm not sure. But I don't really know the extent of the band's popularity or anything like that, but yeah, we thought we were a good band.
Well, it seems to have earned, you know, I hear the name, the band's name pops up in sort of different retrospective avenues. People talk about, you know, whatever, best hard post-hardcore bands of the 90s and things like that. Well, what do you think of the respect it's earned in retrospect, I suppose?
I don't really know much about that. I know that... the only, you know, the extent of my knowledge, well, of any sort of, I don't know, of any influences, is basically just people yelling songs out and, you know, while Hot Snakes are playing.
Right.
You know? And that's pretty much all I've really heard about it. I haven't heard anything elsewhere. You know, I don't see the name dropped in magazines when I, you know, look at magazines or anything like that. I just don't. That's the only place I would really see it, I would imagine. So, you know, and as far as bands that sound like Drive Like Jehu, you know, there's a lot of bands that sounded like Drive Like Jehu. I mean, it wasn't that whole, like, you know, long-winded guitar song thing wasn't that unique. I think there are other bands doing that at the time. So I really don't know how influential we were or, you know, if we were. But I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's difficult to be objective about that kind of thing. But, if you can trust me, the band meant a lot to a lot of people.
I know I can trust you.
I appreciate that. What about people yelling out songs? Do you ever indulge that? Is it ever awkward for the rest of the band to play Drive Like Jehu songs? Or does it ever come up?
We played a couple just because people wanted to hear them. And we played... And, you know, they were fun to play, and, you know, no one else was going to play them. So we just decided we'd play a few. We played a couple that were really just not anything like what Hot Snakes were doing, just because we just wanted to do something different and have a sort of looser element, just adding something to our set that was looser, something that we could mess around with a bit more.
Right. Now, the band never officially ended, right? I mean, it just sort of stopped. If that can be said. I remember reading that somewhere where it just sort of stopped.
Well, that's ending.
It is ending, yeah. No, I know. But I just wonder, in this age of talk of, you know, reunions and things like that, has that ever been brought up between the four members?
Of Drive Like Jehu?
Yeah.
I'm sure it was brought up quite a while ago, but I think that, that's sort of not... I don't think it's come up for quite a while.
Right, okay. Well, I was hoping to play something off of one of the two Drive Like Jehu albums now for people to hear. Again, I hate to put you in this spot here, Rick, but do you care to pick a song here? I know this is awkward. I ask people this every once in a while, and they.
I'm gonna leave that to you.
Jeez, Louise.
It's a DJ's job.
Well, it is. I kind of. The only reason I ask is
I don't want to hear any of them.
Really?
That's the problem. You know, I mean, I don't know if people like us to listen to their own bands, but I really don't.
Right.
I like listening to him like just after we recorded something, or otherwise I wouldn't get up and put on a Drive Like Jehu.
Right. No, I understand. I can totally appreciate that. I guess the reason I ask is because I hope it'll give some insight as to what, like, if you had to show, you know, like, imagine this was like, nah, just forget it. It's fine. I'll just pick a song. I was trying to think of a scenario where you'd have to, like, hey, want to hear a Drive Like Jehu song that I'm particularly proud of? Why not this one? That's what I was trying to get at, but
before it's being executed or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I do in that situation. I have to. I'll tell you when I get there.
All right. Well, let's see here. How about Step on Chameleon?
Anything you want.
Ah, you're so nice. I appreciate that. All right. Here's Step on Chameleon by Drive Like Jehu on the Mish Mish Interracial Morning Show. We'll be back with more. With Rick Froberg in just a second. Dan, we're back.
Oh, right.
Well, geez, what'd you think there? Step on Chameleon, that was...
That's great. I hadn't heard that in a long time.
Yeah, well, it's nice to go back down memory lane for some people. Mm-hmm. Welcome back, folks, to the Mish Mish Interracial Morning Show. Again, that was Drive Like Jehu with Step on Chameleon from, it's their self-titled album. Is that... you ever think about that? Is that... Was that?
I think it's... Eponymous? Is that
I think so, yes. I think it's eponymous. That's the term that the people use, yes. Yes, it's their eponymous album. Debut album, is that? Debut eponymous album?
It is the debut album.
It gets complicated. Right, so well, we're back, as I say. That was Drive Like Jehu. And again, my name's Vish. We've been chatting with Rick Froberg of Hot Snakes. We've just been going, as I say, down memory lane a little bit. And, Rick, I guess dating back to Pitchfork and Drive Like Jehu and right up to the Hot Snakes, I personally really enjoyed the songs you've written. I think they're often pretty intense musically, and I appreciate that they can be both, very cryptic and very direct. I wonder, what do you suppose has inspired your songwriting?
My songwriting. Different things at different times, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Usually other better bands. You're trying to ape things that you like about music that you like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much off the board, pretty true.
Yeah.
And, you know, random things that just sort of make it different, or just sort of things that you have no control over and are unique to yourself, and that's what makes something different than other things.
Is there, I know this is, and I'm sure it runs the gamut, but are there particular influences you'd care to cite that people might either be surprised by or be like, yeah, I think that makes sense?
Well, if you're talking about Drive Like Jehu, I would think I should be, bands that you always citing are the Wipers, and I think for that band especially, Honor Roll,
mm-hmm.
or a band from Richmond, Virginia in the 80s, who we really liked, and a great guitar player, Penn Rawlings. Love a Chick. And just a good band in general, and we like them a lot, and
mm-hmm.
probably ape them quite a bit. I'm sure we aped Fugazi, we were big fans of. We were really into the band.
Yeah.
So there was probably a lot of that in there. I think we pretty consciously didn't want to sound like them, but also probably pretty consciously influenced by them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, well, hundreds of thousands of
Yeah.
people were certainly influenced by them.
Right. And, you know, all the stuff that just sort of crept in from listening to punk rock, you know, your Sonic Youth, all that stuff. Just,
mm-hmm.
Well, you know.
And in terms of the Hot Snakes sound, it's a bit more streamlined, it's a bit more succinct, I guess, in terms, at least relative to the last band.
Well, it's a lot more succinct, yeah.
Yeah. What brought that on in terms of, I guess, a newer approach?
Well, for me, I never really liked 10-minute long songs as much. Being the singer, it really was never oriented to me so much.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, I never learned, you know, how to sing correctly or sing like, you know, like singer sings. It's like the song's going over and over again. So you know, I was glad that we had shorter songs with clear choruses and verses and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to sing. We definitely didn't want it to be anything like Drive Like Jane. So, yeah.
Right. Right. I mean, obviously, with you and John in it, it still obviously contains, I guess, elements, personal stamps of
people. So you know, whatever the same sort of prejudices and stuff that they had in that band, they probably brought them with them.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, it was a great band, and I will miss it. But I'm going to ask you about the future in a moment.
Okay.
Before that, I did want to ask you about something that has always interested me. And it's that I feel like you seem content to be kind of ambiguous about the bands you're in. They're often pseudonyms and very plain messages and liner notes and websites and things like that. Why do you suppose you've approached communicating?
Ambiguity. That's brevity and clarity. I don't know.
It's more brevity and clarity.
Well, it's just just trying to. Cut to the chase, you know?
Right. Well, in terms of clarity, there's, again, the pseudonym thing. I must come back to that. The fake names, the nicknames.
The nicknames, Fork, that nickname is just, you know, obviously I got that nickname when I was in Pitchfork.
Yes.
Froberg is the name that I was given on my birth certificate, and that is actually the name I was born with.
Mm-hmm.
Farr is the name that my family had it changed to when I was, I don't really know how old.
Mm-hmm.
It was because it's my dad's business name, and he just decided to change the entire family's name to that, much to my chagrin.
So there's actually, okay, there's not some sort of...
No.
You've outlined quite clearly the connections between all the names.
Yeah, that's it.
There's no ambiguity.
There's no ambiguity there.
No. Well, there goes my question.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I just, even within the website, though, I often feel like, yes, it is very... very to the point, but also within that, it's kind of left up in the air. You're not spelling out all the things for people to figure out. It seems like they're left to their own devices every once in a while.
Which you are anyway, so you might as well just, figure it to their own devices and save your breath.
Right. No, I appreciate that. Well, finally, now that the Hot Snakes are, I believe, done. Is there any unfinished Hot Snakes business? Because I heard something about a DVD that might come out.
There might be, yeah. It's filmed, and
the last few shows.
Exists, I'm not sure what John's plans for that. That's all Swami, and John is the proprietor, and he'll decide whether or not that's going to come out.
So, just to explain to people, what was it exactly? It was the last couple of shows.
Our last San Diego and Los Angeles show were videotaped / filmed, and
that was this month, and then this in August, was it?
Yeah,
I think. Yeah, okay. So they were filmed for the possibility of a release at some point.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing was originally supposed to happen in London, but that ended up not working out for whatever reason, and we. Ended up doing it with some friends in Los Angeles and San Diego. So yeah, hopefully they'll put it out. I'm not, whatever. I'm not sure if they're putting it out or not. I think they went to all that trouble, so I would imagine that's probably going to come out
right.
In some form.
Okay. Well, okay. Assuming then after that the Hot Snakes are through, as you say, I'm wondering, can people expect a new band or musical project from you or from you and John at some point?
Probably not myself and John, just because, we'd be back to the same problem, the distance thing.
Right.
As far as other bands, I'm sure that there will be other bands. How beyond a local level they'll get, how far they'll get, really depends on a lot of things. I mean, you just never know.
Yeah.
I'm sure that, everyone's going to play music still.
You are in Brooklyn in New York, is that right?
That's correct.
And what brought you to Brooklyn?
Originally, I had a girlfriend who lived out here, and I moved out to live with her. And I ended up kind of staying here long after the relationship had the demise of the whole thing. So
I see. I didn't mean to pry. I thought it might have something to do with actually with your artwork.
It had nothing to do with my artwork.
I see.
At this point, because I can't leave, because what I do for a living is artwork, and I really can't do it myself and make any money.
Right. I had a sense of that. So, well, I didn't. Not that you couldn't make money. Obviously, how would I know that?
Yeah. Well, I still like. New York. I still like Brooklyn, so I don't mind. I don't mind living here. I wish I could live better here, but that's the way it goes.
It's an expensive place to live. I know that much from my visits there. But
every place is getting expensive, so it's probably not much different than anyplace else.
Right. But do you feel a part of any sort of? Are you making friends within a musical community there, or?
I have some friends here, and most of my friends are involved in music in one way or another, but I don't feel like we're part of any kind of scene. Or like
No. But I just wonder if there was some sense of collaboration forthcoming or any talk of that on your end of things anyway.
There's a few things potentially, but they're so so early on in the whole thing that I don't really know. We'll just have to see.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Rick.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. I know it's we were sort of exchanging emails there for a while. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
I'd like to close out the show with some music by the Hot Snakes, which I assume that's a band you'd want people to hear.
And, sure.
Okay. Again, I appreciate your modesty within this, and I realize it can be awkward, but... just given that it is a bit of a profile on you and the band, I wonder, again, Rick,
mm-hmm. Oh,
what do you suppose we could play for people right now by the Hot Snakes?
I don't know, play something off the most recent record.
Out in Progress has been featured here and there on our show. We're still a young show, but I've fitted in a few places. I'm wondering what we should play. Why don't we play... Why don't we play this Mystic Decade?
Okay. Good.
I appreciate you dealing with this. I know, again, I it can be a little awkward. I'm trying to make it's a morning show, and I'm trying to make it as much like a morning show. It's a community radio show, so they don't have wacky Dave and Mitch.
Right.
But and I don't aspire to be like wacky Dave or.
Right.
Or Mitch, but at the same time, I'm trying to...
Dave or Mitch.
I don't know. They always have names like Dave or Mitch, and they're always wacky or crazy. So anyway, I thought I would cater to the people, and just here we go. We're going to play some songs, and in this particular instance, we're going to play a song by the Hot Snakes. It's called This Mystic Decade. And that's about it. Here it is on the Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, there you go. That was Rick. That's the first time Rick and I ever did an interview. Rick Froberg and I ever did an interview. August 31st, 2005. I hope you were able to understand what we were saying. I know it was a bit tough and rough. Okay, we're going to get to a cleaner, better sounding bit of audio here. This is from the Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show, episode 196, and it originally aired on April 15th, 2009. This is Rick and I discussing the emergence of his post-Hot Snakes band, a wonderful band called Obits. They were just about to release their debut album, I Blame You, on Sub Pop Records. And again, there's no music here. Pick up those Obits records if you can. You're going to hear us throw to them, but they're not here. Anyway, here's Rick and I talking about Obits. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. My name's Vish, and it's time once again for our weekly artist profile. This week's guest is a genuine hero of mine who's currently based in Brooklyn, New York. He's played guitar and sang in such amazing bands as Pitchfork, Drive Like Jehu, and Hot Snakes, among others. And he's also a very talented visual artist whose work has graced art galleries and rock and roll album covers alike. After something of a hiatus playing music publicly following the last shows by Hot Snakes, he's returned with a new band called Obits, whose new album, I Blame You, is an honest, no-frills punk rock record with excellent guitar interplay, interesting rhythms, uncommonly vivid lyricism, and impassioned singing. I'm so happy to have one of our first guests ever back on the show today to discuss this new band. So ladies and gentlemen, please join me and say good morning to Rick Froberg. Good morning, Rick. Nice to have you here.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Like many fans of your work, I was very excited to hear that you had a new band, Rick. The last time we spoke, I guess it was like 2005, Hot Snakes had just called it a day, and you seemed quite uncertain about when you might play music again. Can you tell us more about Obits and how this band came to be?
Well, at the demise of the Hot Snakes, I think it was, 2005, I guess. That's probably right.
We can do the fact-checking, extensive fact-checking.
Sure, we'll check the facts if I don't know them. But at the end of 2005, we stopped playing. Hot Snakes stopped playing. And I had asked my good friend Sohrab, who lives in the neighborhood here and I've been friends with since I've lived here, if he would like to play music. He was in a band called Edsel before from Washington, D.C. He's been in several bands there. And he's lived here for a while, and we talked about playing some music together, and so we decided to do so, and we found a few friends to play music with, and Scott Gursky, the drummer, was one of those people. He's still playing in the band, and a couple other people who are no longer playing with the band, but their contributions were important, but they couldn't do it for one reason or another, and we got our fourth member, Greg Simpson, who is a local guy from the neighborhood that Sohrab just knew from around the neighborhood, who turned out to be the sort of perfect bass player and fourth member for the band. And and once that happened, the band moved along really quickly, and before that, it had taken a while. It took 2 years, something like that, for us to get our crappy sound down. that's the point we're at now. And we played one show, and people seemed interested. So people bootlegged the show, which I'm not sure if I think that's probably a common thing now. And people heard the bootleg, and there was a small demand, so we started playing, and we're putting out a record, and et cetera.
Right. Okay. And so, wow, I'm surprised that this happened pretty much. It sounds like you started thinking about this almost right after the Hot Snakes were done.
Yeah, I wanted to play music still. I really liked to play music, and and I had friends who weren't doing anything, who were, you know, located conveniently, and we got together and did it.
Sounds simple enough. What other kinds of things have been occupying your time since the Hot Snakes broke up? I mentioned in the intro that you do other things.
I have to work. Music has never really paid my rent. Occasionally, you know, we come back from a tour or something like that and have some money, but I work, and most of what I do is illustration or some sort of visual artwork. I do some animation stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, you know, it's not real exciting, but it helps pay the rent, and it actually does pay the rent. So
right.
That's what I've been doing, and nothing else really of any real interest, I suppose.
Okay, no, that's fine. I just you're a modest fellow. I know that, but I know your artwork is. I enjoy your artwork every time I see it. I'm like, hey, that's a Froberg. That's I like that.
Oh, good.
So I think there's other people who enjoy it too. I've really been enjoying this new Obits record. I blame you, and I notice how streamlined its songs are. They're kind of they're primitive and punk, but they're also rather vibrant and inventive in their own way. Based on your experiences in other bands, was there any particular, like, I don't want to say mandate, but was there any songwriting approach you wanted to either explore or even avoid with Obits?
Well, we wanted to concentrate more on songwriting itself, as opposed to, you know, with when I started playing music, the first music I heard that made me want to play music was you know, sort of post-punk music, like Sonic Youth or something like that. The first time I heard the song Brother James by Sonic Youth, it was like, oh, wow, this is really great. This really speaks to me, and I could conceivably do this. I had a guitar, and it seemed much more possible to play music like that. And so in some ways, I don't want to say that this is a regressive thing, but we're trying to not just base it around guitar textures and riffs and stuff like that. We're trying to actually write some songs, and that's something that is a new challenge. And you always try to write songs, but it's hard to say. We're trying to make more palatable songs. I'm not sure.
You're concentrating on the craft of songwriting, is basically what you're saying.
We're trying to. We're trying to put together interesting songs, or not interesting songs, but good songs. Like, interesting is a bad way to describe music, but
well, is there does seem to be a mixture of different styles here. I hear every once in a while a particular emphasis on the blues. Do you think that's fair? Is that a fair assessment?
Sure. I think that I think it's very rock and roll, and I think rock and roll is rooted in the blues, certainly.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, if it's not rooted in the blues, you have it's obvious, and I think we're not trying to do like Eric Clapton kind of stuff or anything like that. We are.
No.
It's rooted in more rock, traditional rock and roll. I mean, like it's the things we like are. And the things I've always liked, honestly, are rooted in that more. So the band reflects the tastes of the individual members more. Or I have more in common with them in some ways than I did with other bands I was in, just because it sort of caters to my prejudices.
Right.
Prejudices.
Okay. I thought I actually caught a Dylan reference.
Actually, there was Dylan references in Drive Like Jehu records.
Right.
I don't know if people caught them.
well, you know, this one.
What was the reference?
I heard "Don't the Sun Look Good" going down on.
Oh well, that's a cover. I mean, that song, Milk Cow Blues.
Milk Cow Blues. I guess that's true. I didn't even caught. You know what? I have like an advance, so I didn't even get a track listing and stuff. So I didn't even clue in.
That's a pretty punked out post rock version of a song that's been played by a million people. Ours is based more or less on the Kinks version or the Nomads version or the Chocolate Watch Band version. It's like that song has been done by everybody from Aerosmith to Eddie Cochran.
Sure.
Everyone's done that song. It's a song that you can, if you were to research that particular song, there's a couple different versions that are distinctly different from each other, but there's a million, Elvis has done it. A bunch of people have done it.
Right. You mentioned there are other Dylan references. I'm just curious about that. No.
Probably not in Obits that I'm aware of.
Okay.
They could be subconsciously there somehow, but we might have included them that way. But I'm not sure. There's probably references to other things, but they might be more stylistic than like lyrical.
Okay. Are you a fan?
Of Dylan, of course. Yeah.
Okay, just wasn't sure. I did not know that. I'm a huge fan myself.
Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert on Dylan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
My knowledge of Dylan stops at like Nashville Skyline or something like that. Whereas some of the other members of the band, know much more about Bob Dylan than I do.
Okay, no, it's fine. It's not a scholarly thing. I just, when I was listening to the record, as I say, I was just having it on and I heard that in the background. I didn't even clue in what song it was. And I'm like, oh, and it turns out you were referencing a song that Dylan was probably himself ripping off.
yeah, I think it's Kokomo Arnold is the original.
Right.
I'm sure that everyone has run into that song at some point.
Sure, right. Well, right now I thought we could actually listen to a song from I Blame You, and I was hoping you might pick one for us to hear, Rick.
Okay. I'm going to pick a track listing here. Let's see. I think I'll pick the song called S.U.D.
Okay.
I like that song a lot.
What does S.U.D. stand for? Or does it stand for anything?
It stood for a few things. We had a few different titles that went better with the lyrics, but the titles didn't really sit as well, and we didn't like the titles as much, so we just decided to go with the acronym that we can change the meaning of as we see fit.
Oh, okay. It's interchangeable then.
Sure, you know.
All right, well, that sounds good. We'll be back with more with Rick Froberg, but first here's S.U.D. by Obits on the Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. You're listening to the Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. That was S.U.D. from I Blame You, an excellent new record by a great new band called Obits. To learn more about this record, please visit subpop.com. If you're just joining us, our special guest today is Rick Froberg, a lead singer and guitarist in Obits. Thanks again for being here, Rick.
My pleasure.
Is it really your pleasure? I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you're not having fun.
No, I mean, what could be better than sitting around talking about your own band?
Talking about your own stuff. Yeah, I know. It's hard. I appreciate your time.
No, that's fine.
Rick, you've been a key part of some amazing bands already, and I know we just talked about how you don't want to really talk about that, but in a sense, you do have kind of a legacy of great music behind you. In Hot Snakes, you and your longtime collaborator, John Reese, seemed at least conscious of that. You'd occasionally play Drive Like Jehu songs live. With a completely different group of players around you, does Obits feel like more of a clean slate for you creatively?
Well, I think so. I don't think you would hear any songs from any of my bands being played by Obits, mainly because, I mean, John Reese was in Hot Snakes and wasn't Drive Like Jehu and Pitchfork or whatever, so you'd be more likely to hear something like that then, since we were the primary writers of the songs.
Of course, yeah.
And this band, yeah, I'd like to do something completely new and make it, get a new start and do something new, and that's sort of the point behind. I've been in a lot of bands or several bands, and it's. Generally, you know, the band breaks up and you do something new, and it's not the normal career trajectory of a band where that they kind of stay together for a while and as long as they possibly can, and then I don't know what happens, but a lot of us, John and I, are pretty into starting something new.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's got his band, the Night Marchers, and he's had the bass band, the Salt.
Sorry. You know, respectively, I thought you meant.
Yeah, if the band peters out or whatever or gets old, then you start something else.
Right. Sorry, when you said that, I thought you meant that you and John might start something new together.
No, not. There's no plans to do so at the time.
Right. It sounds like you're both busy. What do you think of the Night Marchers, by the way?
They're great. We played some shows with them, and basically the Night Marchers is the Hot Snakes without me in it. <That's pretty funny. laughs> Tom Skittos, who was in CPC Gangbangs, who were a Montreal band.
Yeah, they were a great band.
Yeah.
Are they gone? Are they totally gone?
I think they're gone. Yeah, I saw them. I saw a few of their last U.S. shows here in Brooklyn, and they were great. But
yeah, they were in 2008 at the end of 2007, they were my band to watch in 2008 for one of the magazines I write for, and
yeah, watch go down in flames.
Yeah, I think that's actually what I said. They would probably set the world afire and burn up, and I guess they did. That's I was more right than I knew, I guess. I feel dumb. Well, I mean, that's great. I'm glad that you feel like that it's completely a clean slate. I mean, it sounds like a good move for you just to kind of do something new. I mean, Are you getting feedback from people already about the difference between obits and something like Hot Snakes, for example?
Yeah, I think that's inevitable. I mean, people, it's good and bad. I mean, if you've been in a bunch of bands before and people are familiar with them, then they naturally will compare your newest band to the last band you were in, and that's always happened. I mean, when Hot Snakes were around, it was compared to Dread Like Jehu, and when Dread Like Jehu was around, it was compared to Pitchfork and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So,
you're used to it.
Yeah, the process is kind of the same every time, and it's totally fine. It helps the band. People are familiar with the other band, and it helps you. And you have to answer questions about the previous bands before, but that's not a problem.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad you're accommodating to these these questions.
No, I mean, it's fine.
Yeah. Well, finally, Rick, I tend to think of you as a rather prolific artist. You seem to write songs and produce work at a relatively quick pace. Can you tell us about your plans for the next while, both in terms of obits and I suppose, other things?
Well, obits, it's kind of just getting started. We have a record coming out, and so we're going to have to do all the things that entails. It's on a really good record label, and it's a much more organized endeavor than the ones I was in before. And I also have a lot more, it seems like there's more sort of responsibility delegated to me than there was before, so I'll be busy. We think we're going to be, you know, doing some touring, and then I guess we'll focus on the next record, and hopefully we'll be able to keep, I like this band to have a little more longevity since we're getting older, and
yeah,
I wanted to see, I guess so this is sort of an, to see if we can grow old with dignity into this kind of music. I don't know if this is, if it's even possible. But we'll see.
No, I mean, I wish you all the best in that sense. Are you already, often the way these release cycles work, the band is already halfway through their next record when the first one comes out. You know what I mean? Are you already in the process of writing more songs?
Oh yeah, that's really the fun, one of the most fun, aspects of being in a band. You writing songs is really fun. So we're always messing around with songs, and if we don't have to rehearse specifically to go out and play, do the set, the songs
right.
Then we'll be tinkering around with new ideas generally.
And this is a going thing. You're practicing a couple times a week, kind of thing. You're working on stuff.
We practice as much as possible. At least twice a week, and we not like the drill sergeant kind of thing.
It's not a job yet.
No. I don't know if it's possible with the kind of music we play, and especially the way things are now, to really have it be the only thing we do.
Right. Well, I wish you the best of luck, Rick. As you know, I'm a huge fan, and I want to thank you again so much for joining us today on the show.
Thanks, Vish.
No sweat. I want to tell people that for more information about you, they can visit rickfroberg.com. It's rickfroberg.com. And for more information about the Obits and their awesome new record, I Blame You, please visit obitsurl.com. That's a clever URL.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say. You could have put some www's in there too, and then it would have been really, really.
I think that's a given. You always have the www.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying you could have had www.obitswwwurl.com, and then it would be very meta.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Thought of that.
Well, probably for the best that you didn't. It's not a great idea, if I might say. Before we go, Rick, I thought I'd ask you to pick another new song for us to hear.
New song. Let's see. How about the song called Lilies in the Street?
Lilies in the Street. That's a lovely title. A lot lovelier than I Blame You, which I must say seems a little pointed.
It's an instrumental, so it takes the edge off it a little bit.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. All right. Let's hear that now. Here's Lilies in the Street from the new album I Blame You by Obits on the Meech Veesh Interracial Morning Show on CFRU 93.3 FM. In Guelph.
There you go. That was Rick Froberg and I having a chat sometime in 2009 to discuss the first Obits album, I Blame You. That interview originally airing on April 15th, 2009 on the Meech Veesh Interracial Morning Show on CFRU in Guelph, Ontario. Next up, another interview Rick and I did for that same radio show. This is from episode 284, and it aired on April 6, 2011, and we were talking about the second Obits album, Moody, Standard, and Poor. Here it is, myself and Rick Froberg.
Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. My name's Vish, and that was Brooklyn, New York's Obits with No Fly List from their excellent new record, Moody, Standard, and Poor, which is out now on Sub Pop Records. Our guest this morning is Obits singer, guitarist, and graphic artist Rick Froberg. Prior to forming Obits about 6 years ago now, I think, Rick played in influential underground rock bands like Pitchfork, Drive Like Jehu, and Hot Snakes, and he's also a renowned visual artist who may just have designed a record sleeve or t-shirt logo for one of your favorite bands. It's entirely possible. Obits have followed up their amazing 2009 debut LP, I Blame You, with a new, possibly even more powerful record called Moody, Standard, and Poor. Here to tell us more about this is Rick Froberg. Hey there, Rick. How's it going?
Fine.
Nice to have you back on the show.
Nice to be back.
And you're on the airwaves in Guelph.
Yep.
tiny little town of Guelph, Ontario, which I assume you've never been to.
I haven't been there yet. I love the name, though.
It's a good name. People often like the name. I remember once Shellac, Bob Weston, told me that Shellac would only play Guelph, over Toronto, rather, because he liked the sound of Guelph better.
Is that an actual policy, or was he just kidding?
I think he was kidding, because they ended up playing Toronto first. And
okay.
I've never played Guelph. I'm still hoping that day comes. and the same for Obits. It'd be nice if Obits bypassed Toronto to play a funnier-sounding town name.
I don't know if we'll ever bypass Toronto. Toronto's a pretty good place to play.
Yeah.
And has good venues and stuff like that. But I have no problem playing with Guelph.
That would be nice. Hopefully we can make that happen someday. So I went on record recently. If you can go on record using Twitter and Facebook and stuff, I went on record saying that No Fly List is my favorite song of 2011. So no matter what happens for the rest of the year, I have to live with this. It's my favorite song.
Yeah. It's only March or April.
Yeah, it's very early still in the year, but I've gone on record. It's a really, really interesting song. I'm curious, can you tell us what inspired this idea of No Fly List?
Well, I mean, the first thing that inspired it is I needed some lyrics, probably. If you mean the content of the song, the lyrical content, or
sure.
Do you mean the actual musical content?
Well, I hope both are kind of hand in hand a little bit, but yeah, sure, the lyrical content in particular strikes me as very clever. I enjoy it. I enjoy the delivery of it. It's just a very catchy song.
What inspired it? The first verse is sort of based on like a playground rhyme, I think, that I remember from childhood. And I guess the rest of it was just sort of inspired by sort of the current climate. I don't know.
Sure.
Political climate or whatever, I don't know. Social climate? I don't know. I don't know. We'll listen to it and see what they think. I guess they already have.
Well, we've already heard it. Yeah, no, people who have heard it, I think, like it. We've been trying to play it on the show whenever we can. Michelle.
Did you beep it?
No, we don't beep it. No, of course not. We're not.
Well, it's Canada. I forgot.
We can do whatever we want in Canada.
That's true.
Michelle, I know, likes the song Naked to the World. That's whenever we have a little Obits argument, which that would be weird if we had Obits arguments. It's never really happened. But she really enjoys Naked to the World. I enjoy No Fly List. I think, and this is obviously open to interpretation, feels like you're capturing the idea of marginalization. And I don't think it's just these two songs. I think it's maybe occurring throughout the record. Is that drawn from, if that's true, is it drawn from a personal perspective, or is this just a narrative you're adopting?
I don't really think it's set out to do anything like that, but I think, you mean what is the record about?
Well, I don't mean as a whole, because that could be a longer interview, but maybe, sure, yeah. Well, yeah, you know what? I am asking that, Rick. What is this record about? Because to me...
I don't know. I didn't really... There was no idea behind that. There was no theme behind that, but I don't know. It seems like it's just kind of about this sort of a feeling of powerlessness in general. And
yeah.
In every facet of your life, or my life, or I guess it'd be my life. but yeah, that's probably close to true as anything else.
You know, it's interesting to me. You're one of my favorite songwriters. Like, I like your lyrics a lot. I like the ideas you come up with. Whenever I talk to you, though, you seem to downplay the lyrical aspect of your band's work, whatever band you're in.
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to downplay it, but it could be high school poetry as far as that's probably what it is, more or less. I mean, some of these things are pretty obvious, and I don't like to make things more obvious than they already are, because you want to have people to have some sort of interpretation of things. And if you explain things to people, then, you know, it's kind of tyrannical in a way. You've said, oh, this is what this song is about. And I think, oh yeah, that's what it's about. It came from the horse's mouth.
Right.
And I don't know. I don't really set out to say anything in particular. I just kind of start putting crap on paper or whatever.
See, there it is. That's the downplaying. That's the downplaying thing I'm talking about. That's something you've said before. You're like,
No, I don't know. That's just my bent. I'm not sure why I did that.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's and I appreciate the fact that you don't want to lead people to the water, so to speak, or whatever. But let's look at No Fly List again just for a second. I want to move on. But this idea of marginalization, have you yourself felt marginalized in recent years?
I don't think marginalized. Like I said, it wasn't marginalization is not really. I mean, the margins have just narrowed in general.
Narrowed. Okay.
I think for people who live certainly in America and elsewhere, probably it's certainly worse elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Probably not in Canada. But I don't think marginalization is the right word.
Okay, to be fair, I came up with that word.
And, that's fine.
And I may have ruined your record.
I think people feel, or at least, you know, there's a certain, like, I don't know, poverty of inspiration and energy, and things seem like they're going to shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not that things, I don't know, maybe it's just we're all really innocent before or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's really hard for me to explain that, you know, what I'm exactly saying or whatever.
That might be one reason why you write the songs you write, I guess, in a way. You're trying to convey that expression.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if I was good at doing that, then I'd got my speaking tour or something like that, but that's not going to happen. And so, music is a way you express yourself and hopefully entertain other people.
Right.
So you're kind of straddling a weird line there.
Absolutely, I can see that in your artwork for your own bands. You occasionally create characters. There's sometimes kind of human-like. Other times they might be a little more surreal, abstract, maybe cartoony. I guess could be a word someone would use. I'm curious, and this is going to be a tough question, maybe. But how does your conception of your graphic characters when you're coming up with characters? How does that differ from how you go about writing songs about people? Because on the new record, I feel like you're writing songs a lot about different kinds of people from different perspectives, their own, other people's. I'm curious, is there a connection there, do you think, between your graphic art and when you're writing songs about figures and people?
I've been asked this before. I mean, I'm sure there's a connection. I mean, it's coming from the same source, me. I don't know if I'm writing about other people so much. I write about my own perspective more than I write about other people. Don't really.
Is that right? I hear, like, you write it a lot in the first person, and I sometimes think that you're telling a story about someone's, like, from someone else's perspective. I never think of it
maybe,
as.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I don't feel like I am. Feel like I'm not saying I feel like, oh, these things are universal. And I just kind of, It's a dumb process. I mean, once it's done, then I have some idea of what it is or this seems good.
Yeah.
This seems true on some level or whatever, or this is going to have to do because I need some lyrics here. It's just like stumbling around for me. I'm not like Bob Dylan or something, you know.
I really love Bob Dylan. Sometimes, I was going to give you a high compliment and say sometimes you're like Bob Dylan, but that might be a bit crazy.
I'm probably nothing like Bob Dylan.
Well, I really admire Bob Dylan's lyricism. I think it's very, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of people do. He kind of invented contemporary songwriting in a lot of ways, but I can see connections between the level you're at and someone like Dylan for sure.
I think that, you know, that's very nice. I definitely wouldn't put myself in the same category as Bob Dylan. I mean, everyone's, you know, all rock and roll music, you know, is kind of influenced by Bob Dylan's thing, I think.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be. And, you know, so anytime you hear that kind of thing, I'm not saying that he's the source of that, but he might be one of the first people to say, you know, oh, this. I'm not sure. It's a hard time. You know.
No, I understand. It's a tricky question too, because I guess what I'm saying is that I think you've taken some high-minded ideas and put them into wordplay that is really clever, and I appreciate that. And then within your artwork, I guess I'm wondering, between the songwriting and the artwork, is one more fantastical than the other? Because you got a little more license to be slightly stranger or weirder when you're drawing stuff, maybe. Or that's my perception. As someone who doesn't draw. Or make
you
art.
You do if it's for yourself, and if it's something where you're not, you know, you're at the top of the chain as far as what's going to happen and what you can do. I mean, if you're doing work for somebody else, you don't have that, you know, those.
Yeah, that's true. There's parameters, I guess.
You do that. So, but yeah, when it's yourself, you know, you can do what you want, say what you want, and it's a good position to be in. It doesn't pay very well, but that's the reason to be in a band and to be. Your own thing.
Right. I'm starting to pick up on little threads between the Obits releases, like, and I don't know if this is a coincidence or not. Like, for example, you had a song there called I Can't Lose?
I Can't Lose, yeah. The 7-inch, the one that came out of the 7-inch?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a song called that.
And then on the new record, first song, You Gotta Lose.
Yep. I realized that, there's some themes that are being repeated, or at least the titles use a lot of the same words. I thought about that, and I decided I didn't care.
Does it mean anything, do you think? Or I mean, it's obviously you're the guy.
Well, it means I'm repeating myself. I mean, but
it's the opposite. I can't lose. You got to lose. I mean, that to me is a little bit interesting. The idea that it's repeated, opposite.
Yeah. It is. I mean, it is. It is. Yeah, I don't know. I've always felt that I had, I don't know, an ability or a proclivity to look at things from more than one side.
Sure.
Sometimes it's not so good because it leads to, you know, indecision. And you probably, yeah, that's a lot of that goes into stuff like your band.
Right.
So yeah.
Well, there's nothing wrong with it, but when you're a hack journalist like me, that's like you seize on that. You're like, oh, that's something. That might be something.
Well, you know, I'm a hack musician, so I mean, I understand. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Is it like an inside joke almost to you, like on some level? Like there's little connections that way, or is it just completely random and coincidental? It sounds like the latter.
I don't think it's either one. I mean, I just don't like to. It was not intentional, really.
Okay.
I try not to have too many fixed ideas about doing this kind of thing. You have your own prejudices, and those just kind of come out, and that's how it works.
Last album's called I Blame You. Last song on Moody Standard and Poor, I Blame Myself.
Right. Well, that might be more of an inside joke because first of all, it's an instrumental. There's no lyrics, and also the second, it's just kind of almost like a version of the same thing. Sort of, it refers to the same riff and stuff like that. So we decided it was okay to repeat yourself. And, you know, it's the same band.
Yeah, no, it's.
I think it's okay to repeat if it's your thing. You do it over and over again, and you know, it's okay to. I think it's okay to repeat yourself a little bit.
No, and what I was saying is I like that it almost seems like these are things that are connected. There's a thread between all of our work, and in some way, here are little hints about about what I don't know. I don't know what are their hints for, but that's what it feels like. They're little crumbs to like some kind of treasure or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of times, you know, I have the same sort of, I have the same questions about this that anybody else who gave a shit would have, you know, I don't entirely know. Like when these things are finished and you've had a while to let them, you know, let them sit in a dark room or something, leave them alone, you come back and look at them, then you have, you know, you might, you know, have a better idea about what you were doing. But, I think that, if you do everything based on your intentions, you're going to get really stiff stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff that's just kind of tied down to your prejudices and your preconceptions and things like that, and you're not going to get anything really that surprises you or not inspires you, but tells you anything, even about yourself or whatever. So
right.
So yeah, you make music or whatever it is you make, whatever you're involved with, that you're could be anything. Could be, I don't know, yoga or something. I don't know.
Do you do yoga?
No, not really. No, I do. I do a little bit of exercise, but yoga. I tried doing yoga and I liked it. I couldn't do it at home by myself. Really, I just didn't. I just it was more fun in a class with, you know, some nice lady and, you know.
Yeah, because they've got the soothing voice. They've got the music sometimes. And they've got the
yeah. Hopefully not the music. Usually, I didn't really like the music, but I did like being in a room and sort of submitting myself to someone else's authority in that way.
Huh.
But when you're by yourself, it's, you know, you're just kind of, it's not the same.
No, it's
although, you know, I might try it sometime. You know, I'm not against it.
I just started this year, like a couple months ago, and I've been actually kind of enjoying it and. The blocks and stuff, like it's all the stuff that I don't know where you buy that stuff. Like I was thinking, like, it'd be nice if I did this at home, but I don't even know where you get that stuff. I have the mat. All I have is that mat.
I think you get the blocks the same place you get the mat, or, you know, your local whatever hippie store.
Yeah, I guess
store. Yeah, I think you can get that stuff pretty easily.
See, that's just it. I see wooden blocks and I think that must be some, she must have got that from like some secret place.
Well, the blocks I've seen are foam blocks.
No, these are wooden blocks. They've got the foam blocks. I think we actually have those at home. We do have those
wow,
at home. But
serious? We could probably just make the wooden blocks, can you?
I guess. I don't know how to. Yeah, I guess. What do you like? Chop down a tree, make plane the wood. It sounds like a lot of work. I just want
to
relax.
Right. Go to a construction site and, you know, raid it and take some 2x4s and nail them together and sand them off a little bit so they don't get splinters.
It does not. That doesn't sound relaxing. Yoga is all about being relaxed, and that just sounds like a lot of work. I just want to get the block. Maybe I should just steal the blocks. I was actually thinking I might steal the blocks.
Yeah, good. Seems like a good kind of defeat this.
But then yoga is all about karma, and then it'd weigh
on
me.
Yeah, it might be some bad karmic energy in there.
It's kind of a drag. I'm just curious, because yoga, it helps me a little bit. I like it.
Yeah, I think that's the whole idea.
Yeah, I think so, too. The last time we spoke, Obits was still kind of a new band. At the time, you'd expressed some hope that the fact that you were all kind of mature guys, you'd been in bands before that broke up, maybe a little too soon. You're hoping that this one was one that you guys could, I think you used the expression age into, like keep doing it for a long time, but also it was music that you felt secure about aging into. Does that still hold true today? Do you feel that way at this point?
I don't know. I don't know.
Do you remember saying this?
I probably said it. I'm sure I said it. I'm sure you have it on tape someplace.
Oh yeah, I can play it back for you right now if you want. No,
nah,
I can't.
I believe you. Yeah, I don't know. I definitely don't necessarily feel mature. So that's why I feel older.
Older might be the word. Yeah, sorry, I threw in mature. I didn't want to say that you guys were older because I thought it might be offensive. So that is something you didn't say. You might have said, we're a little older now.
Yeah.
But who am I to call you old?
I don't know. Old blur. I don't know.
You just don't know. I mean, does the band feel very secure right now? Does it feel like as secure as it ever has?
I don't feel secure about anything, really. I don't know. I don't know if I really am looking for security in life. I don't think I've ever really pursued that. If
if I had, I'd be in certainly different straits than I'm in now. But no, not looking for security, not looking for stability, looking to do something that we like and something that's good. And however long it lasts, how long it lasts. I mean, these things have a life like anything else. You know, sometimes they die quick, sometimes they go on for a while. And, you know,
yeah,
you just work
yeah.
it out moment by moment. So it's hard to say.
How about this? Are you enjoying being in Obits, Rick?
Yeah, sure. That's fun.
Does it seem like a band you'd want to be in for as long as you possibly can, kind of thing? Are you feeling good about it?
Yeah, it feels pretty good. But that said, you know, I was in bands before, and I probably said the same thing. So
right, you're trying to be cautious this time.
No, I'm just trying to not bullshit anybody. I don't know. I'd like to stay in the band, and then hopefully the band. I mean, we're not. There's no impending breakup here or anything like that. So we're all doing pretty good.
Yeah, you've got a bunch of tour dates coming up too. So I assume everything is.
Yeah. But as you know, there's practical things as well. I mean, as you get older, it's harder and harder to sustain a band, to be in a band on this level, because it's on a small level. We don't make very much money at all.
Yeah.
And you have to pay your rent, and you have to do that somehow, and it's getting harder and harder to do that, being in this sort of, you know, whatever, small-time rock band. It's not easy. And it's as you get older, your energy levels are a little more compromised and all those things. And also the context that you play in is changing, and, you know, people of all ages aren't interested in us. I mean, kids aren't interested in our band. A lot of people who are in their, you know, in their 30s and 40s and stuff like that. Maybe a couple people in their 20s. I don't know.
I can kind of see that. I can maybe agree with it as being someone in my early 30s. I can see that, but you're making kind of timeless rock and roll music on a lot of levels, like more so in this band than maybe almost any other band you've been in.
Maybe. We'll see how timeless it is in 20, 30 years. But
sure.
There's just a lot of difficulties in sustaining this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the only way to, you know, used to sell records before, used to, all the expenses have gone up, but the pay is the same. It's harder to keep doing.
Well, I hope you keep doing it, Rick. I really do. I
hope so too. I mean, I like it a lot. I just, you know.
You did stop there for a while, and some of us kind of missed it. You were in between.
I stopped for like 6 years or whatever. I wasn't in the band for 6 years or something like that. And
that was no good for anyone. I'm telling you. I don't know.
It's good for me. I think it was okay for me.
It's all right. Fine. It was fine for you. I didn't like it. I can't even speak for anyone else. I'll just tell you, I was not a fan of that decision, and I'm happy. I'm happy you're back, Rick. I'm just happy you're back making music. It's good.
Well, thanks.
You're very welcome. Our guest today was Rick Froberg of Obits, one of the best rock and roll bands in the world for kids of all ages. I tell you, you really gotta get into Obits if you don't know who they are. They've just released their second album, Moody, Standard, and Poor, which is a very evocative title, Rick, if I might say. Moody, Standard, and Poor. Are you quoting something there?
Well, you know what the S&P are and Moody's are. They're credit rating agencies.
Oh, is that right? Okay. So, I'm not...
Standard and Poor's and Moody's, they're both credit rating agencies.
Right. So, you another little way of addressing the current... vaguely, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but kind of addressing the current economic climate in your country. Oh boy,
man, I really want to avoid having people think that. But I mean, it could refer to a bunch of music. You know? Maybe it's loaded. I don't know.
I never thought of that. I don't think. Actually, maybe it is Moody Standard. I don't think it's Poor, but the music is Moody and not Standard. Oh boy! Now you've got me backtracking on a thing that I said to you or something. I don't know what just happened there. You can learn more about picking up Moody Standard and Poor at subpop.com or obitsurl.com. The band is touring parts of North America, including Montreal on April 9th, and they're also going to Europe over the next few months. Again, check out obitsurl.com for all of your Obits needs. Before we go, Rick, I hope you might pick a song for us to hear from Moody, Standard, and Poor. And
I'm going to defer to your wife. You play Naked to the World. That way everyone's happy.
Okay. Appreciate that very much. My favorite song, her favorite song. This is Naked to the World by Obits on the Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. Thanks again for being on the show again, Rick. Much appreciated.
No problem, man. Thanks so much for having me again. And thanks a lot. And maybe we'll see you up there in Guelph or Toronto or something.
I hope so. I absolutely hope so.
All right. There you go. There was that. Okay, now I'm going to present one last piece of archival audio for you. And I did not remember that this existed. I was going through what I thought I had, what I remembered having, and then I decided to just check my website. I used my own website, the search function, vishkana.com, for a quick plug, and I typed in Rick Froberg, and this came up. August 12th, 2011, apparently I connected with Rick Froberg to talk about Hot Snakes playing some reunion shows for the first time since breaking up in 2005. And they were, I did not know this existed. I forgot doing this. I think I was on a paternity. I was on a parental leave because my child is just born, which Rick alludes to actually here. And so I think I wasn't working. I was working at the time for CBC Radio 3 and was on parental leave from there. And I guess I must have done this for Exclaim magazine. I haven't looked it up. And it's literally me calling Rick up, not meant for any kind of audio consumption by anyone else. And it's just us having a chat about the Hot Snakes coming back. And I think that's going to be it for this memorial episode. So I just wanted to share these things with people who might want to hear Rick's voice again and maybe in different contexts and contexts that haven't been heard in a long time, if at all, by some of you. And for what it's worth, it helped me deal with losing him, to go through these things and remember these conversations. So I hope it helps you. And if it doesn't, I understand. But I hope you find, if you're hurting and you miss Rick Froberg, I hope you find solace in something. And knowing that he made a huge impact artistically, musically, and with his visual art and all sorts of other ways, socially. And I will miss him forever. This is really a hard one. And I can't believe it. I really can't. This isn't the last time. What I'm presenting to you isn't the last time Rick and I ever spoke, of course, but it is one of the last things I have before starting this show. And so I'm sharing it. It's short, relatively speaking. And thanks for listening to this. And be well. I don't know. Thank you so much, Rick Froberg, for everything. Great friend and a great inspiration. Thank you. Thanks all. Enjoy myself and Rick. Again, I believe this conversation took place around August 12th, 2011.
Yeah, so I was just calling to ask some Hot Snakes related questions. So first of all, I guess the basic thing is what's going on? Why are you reuniting for this All Tomorrow's Parties thing?
We get asked, and we decided to do it. Yeah, it kind of came out of the blue. We thought it would be a good idea. So, got offered good money to do it. Thought it'd be fun to do it. So we did it. And then since we're doing it, we figured I might as well do a few more.
Right. So do you have any details yet about the few more?
I do not. The only other thing I can talk about really is the fun festival in Texas. I think it's on November 5th,
right?
And that's the only thing I can really get that's really confirmed.
Okay, and the rest of the stuff, there might be a few other shows. That's what I understand from John's post.
Right.
There'll
be a few other things, I'm sure.
Have you ever been asked to reunite prior to this? First of all, who at ATP specifically invited you? Was it Les Savifades?
Bobby Bob did.
Okay. And have you been asked before?
Nope. Nope, we've never been asked. Other bands have been asked. Tribe of Jehu was asked before to do various reunion things.
Right. And has that ever been a possibility?
It's different with Tribe of Jehu. I think the difference with Tribe of Jehu and Hot Snakes is that everybody in Hot Snakes, you know, is an active musician, whereas in Tribe of Jehu, that's not the case. I think it's a different matter when you have people who haven't played music at all, you know, for years and years and years and years doing so, and then, you know, people who are in they do it. It's a different thing.
Right, okay. And was it, I mean, Hot Snakes did sort of kind of reunite once before.
Not really. I mean, we played a few couple songs at the Casbah. It wasn't like a reunion. It was just like we played some Hot Snakes songs.
Right, but it was everybody. It was like the original.
It was everybody from the band, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and so it was like an Obits Night Marchers show. Everyone was there, and you all played. That's just how it worked.
Yep, yeah, that's true. It wasn't like an official Hot Snakes reunion where we practiced or anything like that. We probably practiced for 15 minutes before we played, before we all played our sets, and then we just went out and kind of fumbled our way through a couple songs.
Now, if I remember correctly, you and I talked about this before. I think when Hot Snakes did announce that you were ending things, and it was pretty amicable on many levels. You, if I understand things correctly, it was a geographic consideration, right? You had moved to Brooklyn. The rest of the band still based in California, I think?
I lived in Brooklyn the entire time I was in Hot Snakes.
Oh, well, geez, then I am wrong.
But it was, we were a long ways away, and it was difficult to practice and things like that. And yeah, and there are other considerations and other things that make, you know, you just get sick of being in a particular band, and so you stop doing it.
Right.
So, it's that kind of stuff.
Is there a certain excitement about doing these shows, sort of like an official reunion shows?
Yeah, everyone's pretty excited. I mean, everybody who's going to be playing is excited. I think that from what it sounds like people are pretty interested in general. The band certainly seems like it's more popular sort of now than it was when we were around. So we're receiving better billing and things like that. But I guess that's, you know, often the case with bands that break up and get back together.
Yeah, why is that? What do you suppose that is? Is it because people, it seems more precious then? It seems like, I guess people don't realize what they've got until it's gone, so to speak?
Yeah, and then, you know, there's people who come along and who were too young or whatever, or missed it back then, and just didn't find out about it. But, yeah, you know, it's, who knows why. I mean, that's, it could be something that, miss your water till your world is dry or some kind of cliche like that.
Right, right, okay.
I don't think it's like a band is an essential thing, but it's,
No, it's just, it's happening more and more. It's everyone is kind of realizing that there's an audience far greater now than there was even when they were, I suppose, slugging it out. Like, it was maybe harder going before. For some reason, there's a reappreciation. I don't know what that means or if you've thought about it at all, but it does strike me as interesting that people are like, that stuff that happened 5, 6, 7 years ago is much better maybe than the stuff that's happening now or whatever. And I want to, and now that I have a chance, I missed it the first time. Now that I have a chance to see it, I'm going to go and capitalize on it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That does happen a lot now. I'm not sure why. I mean, I think that also, you know, like I said, if these bands are much more popular than they were when they're around, and you get, you know, they get paid a lot more. So
yeah, which is great.
I mean, I think it's fine. I mean, I don't have a problem with it, seeing as, you know, I still play, you know, in a band now, like Indianapolis, for, you know, door deals and stuff like that. So it's I don't have a problem with it. It's not exclusively that, but we definitely are going to make some money off it. And it's also something, we also like the band, and we want to play. It sounds like fun.
Yeah, yeah. Have you figured out yet if it's Jason or Mario playing drums?
I think, well, that depends on who's available. I think for ATP, it'll be Jason.
Oh, okay. It's possible. It's possible Mario might still be involved.
Yeah, definitely. Mario's pretty busy. He's in off and Earthless, and he's got a band called Spider Fever, and et cetera, et cetera. He's a busy dude. So, whereas you know, Jason's in the Night Marchers, which is essentially Hot Snakes without me in the band.
Right. So, sorry, I don't know why that always makes me
be available. Yeah, I mean, well, it's the same people. I mean, all except for with Tom as well. So.
Right. Okay. Cool. And at this point, it's likely way too early. You know, I'm calling you from Canada, and at this point, you have no ideas yet as to whether or not because when I heard East Coast as primarily where you might be playing, in I suppose in preparation or whatever, just to have more shows before you head over to England, or is that right?
It's not sure how far or how much of this we're going to be able to do. There's a lot of considerations beyond just, you know, what we want to do. This John's back has been kind of bad, and we have to. We're not sure about how that's going to work out, and we are going to play on the East Coast, you know, probably New York. It's a jumping off spot for ATP. We'll probably play some places in Europe. Beyond that, like, you know, playing in Toronto or Montreal or Vancouver or whatever, I'm not sure yet if that come to that. I'm not sure if it'll even come to us playing on the West Coast. I'm not sure.
Just don't know yet. Okay.
Somehow, yeah.
You haven't...
Everyone has their usual bands, and they want to get back to doing that, and me included. So we don't really know how much of this we're going to do.
Right. You haven't had a practice or anything yet?
Not a proper practice, no. We'll have to start practicing probably a week before going out to... Texas.
Okay. And strictly probably stuff that people have heard before. Like, you're going to work on, you're not going to be working on stuff. You're playing some of the older songs.
That's definitely not in the works. I mean, we don't have any new material or anything like that. But I don't know what we'll do. I really don't know.
Have you had, like, the four of you or whoever's involved, you've all talked about this together? Or is it just like you kind of exchanged messages with John or something?
Mostly still on the phone.
Yeah. Okay.
We haven't seen each other. I've seen Mario in person. Last time I saw the Night Marchers was last summer.
Right.
So that's the last time I saw them.
Okay.
And we didn't really discuss it then. We just kind of did this one thing. It was never like something we planned to do. We just got offered ATP, which is a good deal, and it sounded like a lot of fun. So we did that, and we decided to. Do a few more, see how it went.
Right, okay. I have a question. The back catalog for the Hot Snakes band is kind of... It's not really available, is that right?
Supposedly it's available. I'm not sure. That's more of a question for John. I don't really know what the status is with Swami Records.
Yeah, because I went to the site, and I was going to try and buy some Hot Snakes vinyl, and I couldn't find any, and then when I was just looking through what was available, there was, like, I think an Audit in Progress CD. That's it. That's all I saw on the site, and then when I've gone to records, because I'm actually missing my copy of Automatic Midnight, so I was just trying to find stuff, and then I couldn't find anything. And, like, record stores are like, yeah, I can't get anything.
Yeah, that's... That is something I've heard, definitely.
Okay, so is there any?
I don't have much to do. I don't have anything to do with that side of it, really.
Okay. You have no idea if there's any plan at this point? Wait, sorry. Is Swami not? What is the deal with Swami right now? You don't know?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know what this. I guess it's they have a site still.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it hasn't. It doesn't look like it's been updated for in terms of. Newer stuff in a while.
Yeah, I guess not. I'm not exactly sure. I don't know.
There's at this point, you have no idea if there's any plan to repress Hot Snakes records for these shows or anything like that.
There's no plan to do so. No, it's nothing to do with that. I'm not sure what the deal with that.
But there might be there's probably a decent chance that could happen, right? I mean, you're out on the road, might want to bring some records.
It would make sense to have records to sell, but I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, if you want to ask, you should ask John.
Okay. All right, I appreciate that. I'll send John a message. All right, well, thanks for that hot stink stuff. Before I let you go, you've got some Obits shows coming up.
Yeah, we'll be in Toronto and
you're doing London, Ontario, Ottawa, Toronto.
There you go.
I don't know.
That's all in October, right? October?
Yeah, I think that's all in October. Yes, that's right. It's like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday thing.
Yeah. That's looking forward to doing that.
Now, is it true that the Obits also has a new drummer?
Yes, it is true. Yeah, we have a new drummer.
And who is your new drummer?
Alexis Fleissig. He was in Girls Get Boys and Soulfied and Bellini. Yeah, he's great, good drummer.
So. Oh, good. So what happened? Why did you lose a drummer?
Scott was, he just wanted to, concentrate on doing his work when he had time off to spend, on himself and, what he wanted to do other things. And that's pretty understandable.
Yeah.
It's difficult to have a full-time job and then do this whenever you have an opportunity for vacation or whatever, and you know you're married and you want things with your wife or whatever, you know, to sort of dedicate it to this.
Okay.
I'm going to turn to that.
So you got a new drummer and everything is well in Obits. Everything's fine.
Yeah, everything's great. We're leaving on Thursday to go to the West Coast and from Vancouver down to San Diego, a little trip, and then I think the next time we're in Texas sometime in October. We're playing those shows that you're talking about in October as well.
Okay, cool. Just want to make, I'm just making sure that, well, I'm not making sure. I just was curious if the band's status was healthy. I was a little nervous when I heard Scott was leaving.
It's getting there. We've been practicing. In fact, I have to go to practice right now with Alexis, and we're trying to get it all sorted out. So it's good to go.
Okay, good.
He's a good drummer.
Okay, cool. Well, Rick, I appreciate the time, and I'm going to write up a little thing about this.
Thanks for calling, Vish. Congratulations again on the youth.
Yeah, we got a baby. It's Levon. I just heard him crying upstairs. Actually, he's doing well, and
we'll have to cry.
They're supposed to cry. They cry a little bit. I think they cry to exhaust themselves a little bit. If that makes any sense, they need to cry to make themselves tired enough to sleep.
Yeah, that's why I cry.
I didn't know that. That's a technique you use as well.
Great.
Okay.
Great. Better than counting sheep.
All right. Well, maybe I'll try it. I haven't cried in a long time, so maybe I need to do that. And I'll see you when Obits come to town, and hopefully I'll try, and if the Hot Snakes thing isn't coming close to me, I'll try and make it down to New York or whatever.
Okay. I'll talk to you then.
Yes. Thanks again.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.